from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. We do have a very, very packed show, and I love it when we come in and there's just so much news that you cannot squeeze it into every little spot that we have available on the show. But I want to ask all of you this. When you think of Seattle, what comes to mind? Nearly 40% of the respondents in a new survey had really strong feelings about the city. Does that come as a surprise to you? And then in What's New at 10, we're going to share the story of a military vet and father who is standing guard outside a high school in Thurston County because he wants the students to feel safe. And as you can imagine, not everyone is happy about that. As always, we invite you to connect with us, 888-973-5476. 888-973-CHIRO is our state roofing text line.
To give the people what they want, Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
And if you live in King County, you are going to be asked to approve more property taxes to raise $1.25 billion for mental and behavioral health services. This tax proposal would be on the ballot in April of next year. And if passed, it would cost the median value homeowner more than $120 a year and would continue through the year 2032. So where would all that money go?
A new regional network of five crisis centers located throughout the county. The second major part of our proposal, we will stop the loss of residential beds. And not only that, we will replace what has already been lost. The third major part of our proposal, we will invest in livable wages and the work to attract and train and retain a bigger and more representative behavioral health workforce.
County Executive Dow Constantine calls this an opportunity for a generational investment.
Inaction is not an option. We're losing facilities and workforce at the exact moment that mental health and substance use disorder crises are growing.
So, gee, this proposal doesn't offer any specifics of where these new crisis centers would be located other than they would be all across the county.
Yes. And right now, this is something that we have to say yes to. This is very important for our future generations because of inactivity in the past. We have not done a good job at all in addressing mental health problems. We talk all the time. And we blame things on our mental health crisis that we have going on here locally and throughout this country, and we continue to not do something. Let me ask this. If right now you're in King County and you have no health insurance and you have a mental health crisis, where do you go? Where would you go right now? Tell me the place, tell me the address of the place that you would go to. In King County, there are 2.3 million people, and there is not a walk-up clinic for someone without insurance that is having a mental health episode to go into. You guys always make fun of me when I say it's 2022. Well, let me say it. It is 2022, and there is not a public place for you to walk into if you have a mental health crisis. I have more notes to say, but I can't even go past that.
Oh, I want to hear more because it is clear that our mental health system is almost non-existent at a time when we are in crisis. Our homeless crisis is fueled, as we talk about all the time on the show, drug addiction, mental illness. There aren't enough services to keep up with the desperate level of need. It's not just the lack of treatment beds. We've talked about how we don't pay people enough to keep them in these extremely challenging jobs. So I understand the need for these crisis centers. I understand for everything that Dow Constantine and other leaders, Bruce Harrell was there, the King County Sheriff was there. I understand the need. But here's the problem that I have. Why, when we're already dealing with record inflation, are you asking homeowners once again to raise their taxes to pay for this? Why isn't the county first making sure that its own financial house is in order before asking us to fork over more money? Mm-hmm. And this is coming from someone who is usually okay with paying more taxes when I know it's for something that is so desperately needed and that will benefit so many people. But we are getting hammered. And I was just looking through all the different things that we've been asked for. Okay. Right now, a lot of people are getting their assessments and finding out, oh, my home's worth a whole lot more.
Right.
So now I'm going to have to pay that much more in property taxes. And then you're going to talk about this crisis center tax, another tax we just talked about last week to increase for Seattle parks. Mm-hmm. And then the county wants a tax for urban green spaces. Next year, there's going to be a housing levy renewal. There's a transportation package. Now, even as a working person, that's a lot. But what about those on a fixed income?
Well, I've been telling you guys the same thing since we've been doing the show. You guys get mad at me when I bring it up, and because I know it makes way too much sense, but just I think 9 states. How many states in the United States of America, Chef? You might have to fact check.
I think it's 7
that don't pay income tax. But we don't do this income tax. But every day there's a new tax. We'll get a tax here, a little tax there, a little tax there. Wait, you don't know about this tax? You don't know about this tax? How about this tax? Aren't we tired of the dink and dunk taxes? Why do we want to continue to be the state that does not pay income tax? Which, by the way, is interesting, Ursula. There's a whole lot of billionaires here in this state. There's a whole lot of big money here in this state. I wonder how much money could happen if there was a state income tax. But I want to continue on with the mental health part of things. And one of the things that you and I talk about, Ursula, we talk about conflict resolution, the lack thereof. And we also talk about how every single time we are talking about resolutions to problems, for some reason, go from zero to gun every time. So if there's anybody that's saying, gee, I'm tired of being taxed on stuff, I feel you. I agree with you. I 100% understand what you're saying. But I'm also saying to you is mental health is something that we cannot see. If I break my arm or if you break your leg, you go to the hospital and you get right.
Yeah.
You get fixed. But we can't see the mental health situation that we have here, and it's plaguing us in the worst way. So inaction is not acceptable.
And I agree with you on that. But it shouldn't just be inaction is not an option, so I'm going to tax you. How about, this is my question, before you ask taxpayers for money, the question for government leaders is, have you done an audit on your own spending first? Have you looked within before you ask us once again to be your ATM? Because that's what it feels like.
So how long is that going to take? How long is that going to take for government audit themselves?
It should be going on all the time. I mean, you know, and I bring these things up, like, you know, if you look, if you have gone through the pandemic now and you have seen where you are spending on certain resources that you know you have seen in the last 2 years that you have not needed. I'm talking about in government.
Right.
And you're continuing to do it. And maybe you're realizing now, hey, I don't need this many people to be working, for example. I mean, are there other areas where you can cut? Are there programs that are not effective? Are there programs that, again, I think that the first reaction shouldn't always be, well, we're going to go to the taxpayers, because at some point, some taxpayers just can't make it.
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, the follow up question to that is, what do you want to cut? Because to find over $1 billion in resources. Now, I understand that there's this waste, fraud, abuse idea within government, and that so many of our dollars are completely thrown on the floor, basically. But this is the number one crisis facing our area. I think the difficult issue for taxpayers is, unlike a parks levy, you don't see an improvement, something that you can actually look at and be like, oh, look at that nice clean bathroom. The person who is not going through a mental health crisis, whether publicly or privately, you're not going to observe that person. So it's very difficult for the average individual to see where their tax dollars are going, quote, for mental health. Same thing with homelessness. right? So we had the same discussion with any kind of homeless proposal. Use the money better. Show me how you're going to use the money better. Show me the results. That's very difficult to make transparent to people. I just don't know where else you find $1 billion.
Well, it's the one last thing point I'll make. It's like being at the river, and all of a sudden, everybody keeps grabbing the babies. They're saving the babies. Oh, they're so good. You're doing such a good job. Oh, my goodness. There's so many more babies that keep saving the babies. But then you look downstream and you see somebody keeps throwing babies in the water. And that is the biggest problem that we have. So for anybody that's saying, well, what about the money we've been doing for homeless crisis? Well, what about this money? Hey, what about this money? Yes, there's money there, but there's a continuation of problems that are continuing. Increase in 30% of rent, home prices up through the roof, mental health problems that are happening, non-livable wages. You keep throwing the babies in the water.
And I understand all these points, but I also think it is completely legitimate and understanding that we as taxpayers want to know what is going on with our money right now. And, you know, are you being good stewards of our finances? And again, it's not to say that what they're outlining here isn't desperately needed, because I do believe it's desperately needed.
When is the final year? When is, it's 2022 now. When is the year they're like, okay, we gotta get it done now. We have to really come up with something to really address the mental health crisis. When is that year?
It should have been yesterday. But again, there is nothing wrong with saying, I want to make sure that you're accountable. And we don't have a whole lot of specifics on this yet. And I think there's going to be need to be a lot more education before I think you're going to get a lot of yes votes. So it's not going to just be an automatic sell. Okay, so it is an area known for crime, drug use, and buses, lots of buses. But the Seattle City Council is voting today on a resolution aimed at making major changes to 3rd Avenue in downtown. And if approved, the city would cut bus lanes to make way for pedestrians, sidewalk cafes, and retail. And these women tell Cairo 7 TV they welcome this idea.
It's pretty grim. I mean, a lot of the stores have closed. A lot of the professionals that used to come downtown are afraid to come downtown.
I would love if there were more business around the area so that I wouldn't feel as alone as a woman of color.
Downtown Seattle Association President John Scholes says a reimagined 3rd Avenue would be a huge improvement.
Everybody wants to see 3rd Avenue be a better street, and a street that we don't avoid, but one that we're wanting to walk down and linger on and go grab a cup of coffee or sit outside.
But at least one city council member, Tammy Morales, is questioning whether the city has the money to make these changes happen.
I'm almost with Tammy on this one. And the reason why, I'm just like, well, a few years ago, I was being told how important it is for all these bike lanes. I know y'all bikers gonna get mad at me. I apologize. I'm sorry, okay? But then all the bike lanes and all the crosswalks and this making me draw here and beautify this and everything, and this would make 3rd Avenue better with the idea. Yeah, I agree. I think that just nonstop traffic, I think it would be better to have a little place where you can stop and grab a cup of Joe and say hello to your neighbor. Hello. Do all those kind of things. I think it would actually help. It would bring life to that area instead of the transit, you know, area where it's just
It's used by 50,000 cars and buses. So it's definitely a main transit corridor, but it's also been a problematic area.
It's been a problem. And I think you can alleviate those problems by putting a little life there. It's like in your yard, Ursula. It's like planting a garden. It's like, man, you know what? I used to go back and I see the garden. This is a garden type situation. You be there and build the coffee stands and all that stuff. I just don't know. I don't know. Because then y'all might change your mind. And then you're going to tell me in 3-5 years, like, no, we need to do this now. Like, just.
I'm wondering, though, and we were talking about this in our morning meeting. Is this a sign that they're realizing, okay, we don't need this much transit in this particular area because maybe people just aren't going to be coming back downtown? There's what, a 30-40% vacancy rate still, is it?
Yeah. Jeff? Yeah. North of 40%. And I mean, a big tell on this is that the Downtown Seattle Association is leading the charge. In fact, it's their blueprint that Teresa Mosqueda et al. Want to use.
Yes.
You would not have the Seattle Downtown Association saying, take away transit lanes to bring workers into downtown Seattle unless they're not coming back. So I think this is a huge tell for what the future of downtown looks like.
And you might be right. Okay, well, speaking of Seattle, though, when you think of the city, what comes to mind? Okay, text us, 888-973-5476. I'm already anticipating what you're going to say. And I ask this because a new national survey suggests that Seattle may be one of the most polarizing cities in the entire country. You either love it or you hate it. This story comes from the Seattle Times FYI guy, Gene Balk, who wrote about the survey that was commissioned by an online real estate platform. Respondents were asked to pick the five most and least desirable cities. And 21% chose Seattle as one of the five best. Okay, here's the good news, because that was the second highest percentage among the list of 50 cities that they had to choose from. But 16% of respondents said Seattle was one of their five worst places to live, which was the seventh highest percentage. So Seattle was also only one of three cities to make the top 10 for most and least desirable. The other two are San Francisco and L.A.
When someone doesn't live in Seattle and they say something about Seattle, number one thing that they say, ooh, it rains a lot. That's first of all. The next thing they might say, ooh, I hear it's pretty there. And then the next thing they might say, like, hey, I saw some guy from Seattle on a national network saying how awful it really is out there. Whatever the case might be, when it comes to those that live in Seattle, I'll say this. For anybody that says how awful Seattle is and how terrible it is and this is how bad it is, if that person does live in Seattle that's saying that, do me a favor. Ask them their address and ask them about where they live. And then go find out for yourself and go see the block that they live on. And then ask them, when you say Seattle's so terrible, but I'm looking in your neighborhood, it looks pretty good. Why do you say it's so terrible? And oh, by the way, all of your kids that go to the same school, they seem to be doing okay as well. Odd how that happens. The people that talk about the worst about Seattle live on the best blocks.
I think that the people who speak the worst about Seattle don't live in the city.
Oh, that too.
Can you imagine if CNN put a dedicated reporter in Birmingham, Alabama, every single day and had them on air?
Right.
And by the way, how many of y'all complain about Seattle? And if you live in Seattle, but you've been complaining the last 20-some years and you still ain't left.
Not to say the city is without fault, because we know that there are things, but every city has issues. And I want to think that most people, when they complain, it's because they love the city or they love the way the city used to be and want it to return to what they believe were the glory days. But I'm also convinced that there are some people who want to see the city fail, and that breaks my heart.
You know what? I like to do little surveys. Hey, do me a favor, text line. Text me in the glory. Ursula said people want things to go back to the glory days. Do me a favor. Send me the year. 888-973-5476. Send me the year that you believe Seattle was the glory days. I just want to get those years.
The best years of Seattle.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait for those to come in. We should make that a topic. Hey, coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, Amazon. Amazon is adding something for this year to kind of increase the sales a little bit. We'll see if you like it or see if you don't. It's G and Ursula.
I want to ride my
And now you can ride your bicycle, at least all around Green Lake's Inner Loop Trail. Yes, the Seattle Board of Parks and Rec has voted to end the pandemic policy ban on bikes and other wheeled modes of transportation around that Inner Loop Trail. So the question would be, why bring back the bikes and rollerblades and scooters to that same busy loop that those of us who like to walk it or jog it are going to be on, and especially when Seattle is already investing millions to put up those bike lanes on Green Lake's Outer Loop Trail. We talked about that, I think, just last week.
Right.
So the Seattle Times reports that at the meetings, public comment unanimously supported reversing the ban on bikes. So apparently there was a big push for that, which comes as a surprise to me, especially if it's unanimous, because I just know that when I walk Green Lake, I'm good with the rollerbladers.
Right.
But bicyclists, I always think, I mean, adult bicyclists, I can see the kids riding their bikes.
Different.
That's
right,
a whole
right,
different
right,
thing.
Right.
They're, you know, yeah, it's smooth and I get it. You're with your parents. But with all the other bike lanes everywhere else, why do you have to use Green Lake?
All I know is I feel like I'd be on a date walking in that lane. And then all of a sudden, there'd be this bike, this, oh, on your left, on your left. I don't know what, I don't even know the rules. All I know is I mean, ooh, excuse me, sorry.
If they're saying on your left, you move to your right.
So, is that what that means?
Yeah.
I don't be knowing. I don't really, because you guys know I'm from Chicago, inner city Chicago, you know what I mean? We didn't have those type of things. As a matter of fact, can I also, I was thinking about something as we're coming out, we were on break. And I want to share something with you.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I go to neighborhoods and I see people on rollerblades or jogging in the community or walking with their coffee cups, I ain't going to lie. It always kind of brings a smile to my face.
It makes me so happy.
It really does.
It's like life's good.
Life's good. What's your name? Charlie? You know, it's, I always feel good in those neighborhoods. And so my whole overall point, what I'm trying to say, Ursula, is I think it brings a different dynamic when you got to on your left. From the bike.
It's always aggressive, too. Because they've said it 46 times in the last 3 minutes. On your left, on your left. Right? As though you're not expecting hundreds of people to be using Green Lake. I don't like this.
Like anybody. That's what I'm saying.
So you said that you would.
I don't want to bring my kids back. No, because if you have small kids, you know that they're want to wander all over the trail. If you're not holding their hands or physically holding them, they are a danger to themselves and to others. If there are bikes around, Green Lake is not a biking trail. It is 3 miles around. So how long does that take you on a bike? That's like a 10-minute loop? A 12-minute loop?
So
there are
true.
Plenty of places you can ride your bike in Seattle. Now, if you want to make like an exception for kids on bikes with training wheels, right? Okay, maybe. But
for sure.
You know what? Teach your kid to bike in a cul-de-sac. Take them down to the local school. Green Lake is very, very busy.
It's
not meant to be a transit corridor. It's not some place that you can treat like a velodrome, you know, riding around in your spandex at high speed through 9 water bottles and your gel packs.
Okay, stop. That was such a great visual. You cannot take away the rollerbladers for me because G talked about how it brings a smile to your face. When I'm walking Green Lake, and I just see someone grooving to the music and they're doing the backwards skate. That just makes me really happy.
Look, that whoever that person is a good person.
Like, No matter what.
They're bringing the vibes.
Mean people don't rollerblade.
That's because this is 2022, G. In 2022, there's only 4 people that use rollerblades. In 1982, back in the glory days of Seattle, everyone was on rollerblades. And then it was a problem. But, you know, those 4 people that are still holding on, you're cool.
Okay. So the reason, though, that they've changed it back and they're saying, yes, bring your bikes back is because the feeling was we don't want to set this precedent. And this is a quote from the Parks Commissioner, Marlon Herrera, who says, as our city grows, we're going to have a wheel ban at Alki, at Seward Park, and at Burke Gilman by Gasworks. Again, you're free to ride your bike around Green Lake and just watch your kids extra closely so that they don't get run over. And if it was unanimous, maybe all 3 of us really don't know what we're talking about. Because if it was unanimous, maybe the people who use it more frequently know better than we do.
If you're on a bike right now, if you're on a bike right now and you're listening to the G and Ursula show, hit us up. Because I just want to say how impressive it is that you listen to the show on a bike.
Yeah. You know what? You know who's texting us right now?
Who?
A lot of people who are remembering the glory days of Seattle. So we're going to bring back this topic at 11:30, and we're going to share your feedback. But When you text us, don't just give us the year. Tell us why you say those were the glory days.
Yeah.
Or do you think the glory days are still ahead? But I want to hear specifics, and we're going to share them coming up at 11:30.
I guess that depends on what age you are.
That's so true.
Hey, coming up next. So more and more couples that are getting married, they are requesting this for a gift. We'll tell you that next, and we need to talk. She and Ursula. Is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we will be talking about an armed military vet and what he's doing in the community. That'll happen at 10 o'clock. But Ursula, real quick, before we need to talk, I got to admit something. There was a text message that came in from the 206 that says, why is G's voice funny today? Are you sick? And I kind of frowned at it, and I was like, what? And I read it out loud, and then you said, well, G, you do sound different today.
You do.
And then I'm kind of thinking about you. And then I look at my phone, and Lillian texts me, and Lillian says, hey, babe, I'm listening to the show right now. Do you have a cold? Your voice sounds like you've been yelling. To which I said, babe, I have been working the last three nights.
Yeah.
Auctioneering. So, yeah, I didn't realize my voice was messed up, but the listeners do, you do, and Lillian does too.
Yeah, you have a whole nother thing going on even outside of the show. Yeah. And it keeps you out late.
Out late at night.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to use your voice a lot.
Oh, 25, so not 35, 101 a quarter, one and a half. Okay, let's get to this topic. Right now, more and more couples right now are getting married, and guess what they're requesting? I'm going to make this simple and quick, and we're going to get your opinion on this. I'm starting with you, Ursula. More couples are getting married, and they are requesting cash, and they want cash for the down payment for their home. So they're basically saying, Ursula, we don't have a registry. We don't want any of that. Can you please, in lieu of all that, give us cash for the down payment of our home? Your thoughts.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It makes total sense. I don't know how many times I have looked through people's registries. And I'm like, okay, you know, what is the range that I want to spend? Is that something that they're going to really use? I think about my own registry and the things right. that I've used over the years. A lot of times, the things that you get on your registry, as much as you think you needed them,
yeah.
you don't really end up using some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then what ends up happening is it goes into a garage sale or gets donated to Goodwill. I would rather invest in someone's future. I would rather give money, whatever money that I was willing to give.
Facts.
To buy a gift.
Yep.
I would so much rather do it for something like that. And let's, you know, let's just have them be upfront and say, I would love for you. In fact, if I'm given an option like, hey, you can buy anything on this registry or you can donate to our honeymoon fund, I will more often than not do the honeymoon fund.
I agree 100%. And I guess my question, because Chef has that look on his face like he's going to disagree with you. but before I get to Chef, I want to ask you this. What is one gift, what is one gift that every married couple needs?
What is the one gift?
Yeah.
I mean, a set of dishes.
See, I knew you was going to say that. You know, we got
it's nice to have matching dish. I mean, the basic. But even my fine china.
Right? That's
no,
my
no,
point.
No, 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 no. I want to point out that fine china has been used once in over almost 30 years of marriage.
Thank you. Because we only bring the dishes out when company is over. Yeah. Other than that, you got your favorite plate. You got your favorite cup. You don't need the dishes. Chef, you had that look on your face when Ursula and I both agree that giving folks cash, I like saying cash that way,
yeah, I know.
Is good. What's your problem?
But you're not going to do it in I'm not going to put a dollar bills in an envelope. I'm going to. I hope that they have a fund somewhere and you can just electronically.
Well, that's the thing.
It.
That's the thing. Like, I agree that it's practical, but I also want to give something to a couple that they're actually going to remember. No one's going to remember that I kicked him down $100, right? No one's going to remember that.
Yeah,
especially if it's like an online donation. Like, did the husband go through the donor list and check which couples?
Yes.
Nobody remembers that,
yeah,
G.
Yeah, yes, they
you know
do.
What? I guarantee the vast majority of married couples right now, there's something in your home that you've been using for 10, 15, 20 years, and you remember exactly who gave it to you for your wedding. Whether, like, my thing, I love to give people a nice chef's knife. Most people don't have a good knife in their house. You give someone a good knife, they'll use it for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law gave us a Vitamix blender. Every time we pull that thing out, I'm like, thank you, Lynette. I really appreciate that. That's something that I use that's amazing, and I remember that person. $50 in cash, $100 in cash, that's not memorable.
Chef, and I think you make, hold on.
He's a hater.
I think you make a great point. Because Colby just texted in and said an air fryer. If someone gave me an air fryer, I would have loved it. And every time I use it, I'd be like, thank you, Colby, for the air fryer.
And in 2030, you'd be like, man, why is this thing still in the cupboard? This appliance that was popular in the early 2000s for 5 years.
Let's break the tie.
Having moved now and having to move other people's households, entire households, at least three times now in the last 5 years,
yeah.
I can tell you that there are a lot of things that were given at weddings that have never been used.
Preach it. Preach it. Now, let's go ahead and settle the score. Nick, you just get married. What do you want?
Want that chef's knife?
I don't care what you give me. Can we just stop with the toasters at the weddings now? I feel like that's the most cliche gift that you can get. And I feel like some people do the same gifts. It's like, what'd you get? A toaster. What about you? A toaster. Oh, jeez, we got the same gift. I thought there was a list, people.
You're supposed to. Yeah. If there's multiple toasters, it's because someone did not look at the registry.
My buddy Gary Bale is out there, and he hit me up and says, you do sound different, G. Well, thank you, Gary. I appreciate that.
Like you're nursing a cold, like you're drinking tea to keep your voice from breaking. But we'll get through it.
We've got another upstairs is listening.
Yeah.
They're bound to tell me I got to go home for 10 days.
So true. Okay, Joan in the 360 says, after 59 years of marriage, I have boxes of china, sterling flatware, and sterling serving pieces, etc. Now I'm old. My husband is, my husband has passed this year. My kids have no desire for any of it. Yikes. Would you like it, Ursula? Or perhaps even she? Joan, we love you.
We got to re-gift her.
All right. Coming up next, what's new at 10? You guys got to stick around for this story. There is an armed military vet that is doing something in the community. Some people agree. Some people don't. We'll see what you think. It's G and Ursula.